The public part of the House impeachment inquiry is over. Did it have an impact? A former White House advisor says yes, in ways that may not be obvious. That story today on the Texas Standard.
Texas Standard is a production of KUT Austin, KERA North Texas, Houston Public Media, and Texas Public Radio in San Antonio, with support from Rand Group. Software delivered as promised. No surprises.
I'm David Brown. 2020, it's closer than you think, especially if you're in the business of running an election. How much more secure are systems now with less than a year to go before presidential balloting? Over the objections of Native Americans, environmentalists, and more, three new natural gas export facilities get the green light. What will it mean for Texas and the economy? Also, the week that was in Texas politics with the Texas Tribune, and a whole lot more when the Texas Standard gets started, right after this. No matter where you are, it's Texas Standard time on this 22nd day of November 2019. I'm David Brown. Great to have you with us. For some reason, I can't hear 22nd of November without thinking of what happened on that fateful Friday in Dallas, 1963. I have a collection of political ephemera, and one of the most haunting pieces I own is a dinner program printed up for that evening. The chairs had been set up, the decorations were in place, President Kennedy and the First Lady were to be the guests of honor at a $100-a-plate fundraising banquet in the Texas capital city, one that never happened. Instead, the president's lifeless body had been airlifted to Washington a few hours earlier, and an entire nation was united in grief and disbelief and no small amount of fear. It was, after all, the height of the Cold War, and though a Texan had been hastily sworn into office, many worried that the U.S. was uniquely vulnerable in that moment. Whether you live through it or not, such tragedies become grim markers, dots along our American timeline, places we return to when we can pause to imagine what might have been had the bullets missed, had the banquet in Austin gone as scheduled. But what history can also do is remind us who we are, our capacity to overcome, and as this week may prompt us to contemplate the limits of our ability to endure great strains to our national fabric. As journalist Cokie Roberts used to remind us, we have seen much worse than we are seeing today. Still, at the end of the public impeachment inquiry in the House, it is fair to ask how you feel at this moment. Did the hearings move the needle? Did they make a difference? Here to help us get a peek under the curtain, if you will, someone who spent considerable time inside the White House. William N. Bowden is Executive Director of the Clements Center for National Security at the University of Texas's LBJ School of Public Affairs. He was also Senior Director for Strategic Planning at the National Security Council under President George W. Bush. Professor N. Bowden, welcome back to the Texas Standard.
Great to be with you, David.
You were quoted by Peter Baker in the New York Times a few days ago, I noticed, talking about how this impeachment drama is playing out for President Trump. And you noted the White House seems to be cannibalizing itself. What do you mean?
Yeah, well, it really is. I meant it almost literally that this White House is kind of tearing itself apart, where you've got some of the White House employees on the National Security Council staff, as we've seen, you know, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, Jennifer Williams from Vice President's staff, Fiona Hill from the National Security Council, testifying before the impeachment committee about some very concerning things that they saw and observed and heard. Then you also have the White House press office and rapid response team putting out social media and statements really disparaging their fellow White House staff. I'd never seen anything like that before in history. Past White Houses have had their internal leaks and feuds, of course. Every White House has that. But it's the public turning on in itself like this that was really remarkable.
What does that do to the National Security Council's ability to function?
It's very corrosive, because these are, you know, dedicated professionals, dedicated patriots who are, you know, they're trying to help protect our country's security. And it's a very difficult time in the world right now, right? You've got a crisis between Japan and South Korea. You've got unrest in Iran. You've got unrest in Iraq. You've got the protests in Hong Kong. I could go on and on. And the people who are tasked with standing in the gap and watching that and coming up with policies are instead, having to testify before Congress, dealing with attacks from their fellow colleagues within the White House. So I can't even imagine what a difficult time it is there right now.
Well, I mentioned this is a time when a lot of people are sort of asking themselves, what comes of the spectacle that we have just seen over the past several days? Does this, in your opinion, move things, change things in one way or another, especially when it comes to the ability of this president to remain in the White House?
Boy, David, I can't speculate on what's going to happen actually with the impeachment proceedings and the vote. I mean, it does seem like people who were already predisposed to be suspicious of the president had a lot of their concerns validated by what we heard from the impeachment proceedings this week, whereas others who were already supportive of the president and skeptical of the impeachment proceedings, I've not seen a lot of evidence that their minds have been changed either. So my guess would still be you'll probably get a vote to impeach in the House and then an acquittal or not a vote to remove in the Senate. But that's just a guess.
There is, though, something that we should probably touch on, and it has to do with this overarching narrative that the president has been, and Republicans as well, have been trying to cement, and that's this idea of it's the deep state versus the commander-in-chief.
Yeah.
Does that resonate? Or?
Yeah, I think that's a really important myth to dispel, and it's been put out by some of the political operatives out there. But, you know, something I can't stress enough for our listeners is the National Security Council staff, the State Department people who were testifying this week, their primary loyalty, of course, is to the Constitution. They've sworn to uphold that entire country. But they were there believing that they were serving the president also. They thought that they were carrying out the president's policy, the president's official policy. And that official policy, as the president issued in his national security strategy, is to oppose Russian aggression and support Ukraine. And so when you've got these professional staff at the White House believing they're carrying out that policy, and then all of a sudden they're starting to see this weird freelancing from Rudy Giuliani or Ambassador Sondland, and hearing about these side deals and aid withheld and things like that for personal reasons and for political reasons, but not for official policy reasons, that's when they threw the flag and said, wait a minute, this is not what we're supposed to be doing.
Where does you think about those who have the duty, the obligation to advance national policy, foreign policy? Where does that stand at this moment?
Yeah, I think it's very demoralizing because a lot of the military professionals, the intelligence professionals, our diplomats are now kind of wondering, who do we believe? You know, we thought we were carrying out the administration's official policy as issued in President Trump's national security strategy and national defense strategy and others. And now they're being told that there were these rumors that the policy was changing, but they weren't being told it. And then when they hear what this quote unquote new policy is, it seemed to be to advance the president's personal political interests. Yeah, I think it's going to throw a monkey wrench into the works of our national security system going forward.
William N. Bowden is executive director of the Clement Center for National Security at the University of Texas's LBJ School of Public Affairs. Professor, thank you so much for taking time to speak with us on the Texas Standard. Good to see you, sir.
Always good to be with you. Thank you.
Days, less than a year, till the next presidential election. That doesn't leave a lot of time to address people's concerns about election security, does it? Concerns that have lingered since at least revelations surfaced about Russian efforts to interfere with the last one of these presidential elections. What are Texans doing about it? Andrew Schneider of Houston Public Media reports from the Lone Star State's most populous city.
Our elections are only as valid as people think that they are.
John Oldham has been election administrator for Fort Bend County for more than 11 years, serving under both Republican and Democratic leaders.
Our country exists under a social contract, and every time we go to the polls to vote for people or on propositions, we ratify that contract again and again. And so long as people believe elections are secure, you know, that's just as important as making them secure.
Oldham says that's a big reason that Fort Bend County has switched over from purely electronic voting to a hybrid system involving paper backups, because he says that's what residents say they want. Fort Bend County is ahead of Harris County when it comes to upgrading voting machines. The Harris County Clerk's Office has just reached the point of getting permission from County Commissioner's Court to start the bidding process for voting machine vendors. If commissioners give their permission at the December meeting, the process of selecting a vendor could take until May. Diane Troutman is the Democratic Harris County Clerk.
Once we choose the vendor, we'll have to place an order for these machines, and that will be about 8,000 machines. And an order that big, as you can imagine, will take some time to build and get to us. So that places us about early fall before we can actually receive them.
Trying to rush the new machines into service by November of next year could backfire in a big way. Without enough time to educate poll workers and voters on how the new machines work, lines at polling places could explode, discouraging many from sticking around to vote.
Our target date to use them first would be the May 2021 election, which is a much smaller election and a good place to start testing that equipment.
In the meantime, Troutman is focusing on the essentials. That includes making sure the existing machines work as intended. It means training all 333 county clerk staff members for cybersecurity, not just election staff and IT workers. And it means undergoing an internal audit of IT and election systems as required by the Texas Secretary of State. Lisa Mujica is election director for Republican-led Brazoria County, which has already been through the audit.
So we definitely are a step ahead of a lot of the counties out there.
Brazoria County just adopted new voting machines, an all-electronic system with no paper backup.
None of our equipment, the equipment that we use, Verity Touch, those voting booths are not connected to their internet whatsoever. So even when it comes into our office, it's not connected to the internet.
Dan Wallach manages Rice University's computer security lab. He says local governments are making the best of the hands they've been dealt.
Counties and states generally are operating with very limited funding for voting equipment. And what that means is it's a slow process for the counties to find the budget and to go through the budgetary process to replace old machines with newer ones.
In the end, Wallach says, election security largely comes down to public perception. If people assume their vote will be tampered with, they may not vote at all. Which is why one point all three election administrators make is that their success depends on educating the public and instilling trust that the system will work as it's supposed to. In Houston, I'm Andrew Schneider.
Let's find out what Texans are talking about on social media. Here's our social media editor, Wells Dunbar.
Hi, David. After 3 days of impeachment hearings this week, hearing from our friends and listeners about the historic event, Craig Anders York on our Facebook page says, I think what impeachment says about the American character is as important as the event itself. I keep hoping that more Republican members of Congress will start owning up to the obvious, Craig says. Meanwhile, Brad Emmons says, Trump fatigue set in a long time ago when the outcome is a foregone conclusion. Only the pundits and the polarized are even paying attention at this part. Christopher Waters says, it was never a secret that the president is willing to throw any and everyone under the bus in order to avoid facing the consequences of his own actions. But the most likely outcome, Christopher predicts, is that Rudy Giuliani will take the fall instead of the president. And Kevin Jeffries predicts that Trump will be impeached and then cleared in the Senate because the best interests of this country aren't important on any level, Kevin says there. And lots of perspectives and lots of, lots going on there about impeachment.
Hey, listen, the perspective we're missing is yours.
That's right. More
than likely. We need to hear from you. You can tweet us or jump on whatever social media platform you prefer at Texas Standard. Just look for us because Wells Dunbar is looking for you, and he'll be back with more of your comments in about 35 minutes.
Support for Texas Standard comes from TCU, launching Lead On, a campaign for TCU with a $1 billion goal to support people and programs striving to make a positive impact on the world. TCU, Lead On. Support for Texas Standard comes from the Texas Tuition Promise Fund. For over 10 years, helping families lock in current tuition rates and required fees at Texas public colleges and universities, excluding medical and dental institutions. TexasTuitionPromiseFund.com.
Business and your money on the Standard. I'm David Brown. How's this for a headline? Fort Worth-based American Airlines has bumped more passengers this year than all other airlines combined. So reports the Dallas Morning News. American reportedly involuntarily denied boarding to more than 3,400 passengers in a three-month period from July through September. Over that same period, Dallas-based Southwest bumped 314 passengers, while United bumped 15. American tells the Dallas Morning News it's aware of the spike, and part of the cause, they claim, are those grounded Boeing 737 MAX jets in its fleet. No word on when those planes are going to be airborne once again. Caveat emptor, holiday flyers. Closer to terra firma, the EPA has announced the end of safety rules regulating how companies store certain dangerous chemicals. As KUT Austin's Mose Bouchel reports, the rules were created in response to a massive 2013 fertilizer plant explosion in Central Texas, one that made national headlines.
Under the Obama-era rules, businesses were required to notify nearby communities about certain chemicals, follow best practices, and get a third-party audit if an accident happened. But the Trump administration says those rules were burdensome and raised security concerns. Tommy Mushka is the mayor of the Texas town of West, where the fertilizer plant explosion killed 15 people. He says he's disappointed.
I think that politicians have very short memories, not only with what happened back in 2013.
Since the explosion in West 6 years ago, there have been other chemical plant accidents across the U.S., including one earlier this year in Crosby, Texas, that left one person dead and two injured. In Austin, I'm Mose Bouchel for the Texas Standard.
Support for coverage of business comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping companies protect their drivers on the road. More at worksafetexas.com/onthejob.
And you are listening to the Texas Standard. Drillers out in West Texas are producing so much natural gas as a byproduct of oil extraction that they're literally setting it on fire. There's just no place for it to go. But the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission made a decision yesterday that could change that. The FERC, as it's known, approved 4 liquefied natural gas terminals for the Gulf Coast, 1 in Corpus Christi and 3 in the Rio Grande Valley. This way, oil and gas companies will be able to liquefy, ship out, and sell natural gas rather than just burn it off. Approving these terminals is no mere rubber stamp either. There's a long, expensive process to get projects like this approved, but they're not without controversy. Joining us now to tell us more, Sergio Chapa. He's an oil and gas reporter for the Houston Chronicle. Sergio, welcome back to the Texas Standard.
Hey there. Good to be here.
There was no shortage of local opposition to these projects. As I understand it, we're talking about the federal government signing off on 3 all-new facilities down in Brownsville, and I guess what, the expansion of one in Corpus Christi, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. It was the 3 Brownsville projects that faced tremendous and, I'd say, stiff and very organized opposition. You had a coalition working there to oppose these projects of environmentalists, Native American groups, shrimpers, fishermen, retirement community, at least 3 cities, and then a colonia.
Why were they opposing these new facilities, which the developers say promise hundreds of new jobs in an area in a region that's rather poor in contrast with much of the rest of the Lone Star State?
Right. No, it's a textbook example of jobs versus the environment. I mean, right off the bat, there were concerns about safety and the environment by these opponents. These projects would be built in a wildlife corridor between the United States and Mexico for endangered species like the ocelot, jaguarundi, and aplomato falcon. So that was a concern. And then the shrimpers and fishermen had concerns about safety and the impact of these operations to their livelihoods. And then you had a colonia concerned about air quality. They're downwind. They would be downwind from the plant. The Gulf breeze blows inland and right into their communities. And then you had a retirement community also worried about that, as well as the city of Port Isabel, Laguna Vista, and South Padre Island, who had their own concerns about these plants' impact to tourism. When you go to the beach, the argument goes that nobody wants to see these big, tall, industrial towers.
What about the economic impact, though? I mean, how much of an impact are these facilities expected to have?
Right. Now, that's the other side of the debate. Now, these 3 plants in Brownsville represent about $38 to $39 billion, billion with a B, of private investment. And along with that comes like 7,000 construction jobs, about 545 permanent jobs, and these are high paying jobs in an area where the per capita income is $15,000. So yeah, that's a significant for the supporters. That's a significant win.
Is it too cynical to ask whether or not the FERC ever says no to projects like these?
So they do not say no to these. It's a, as you pointed out earlier, it's a very long process, one with a very lengthy environmental review. And you know, a couple things came out of this environmental review for these projects. You know, the companies pledged to do things differently than say other LNG plants would. You know, these plants had to buy at least a couple thousand acres of land to set aside for wildlife. One of them, they moved their site on their proposed property to allow for a wildlife corridor for ocelots. And then they're using, one company is using like electric turbines that make, you know, much less noise. Mm-hmm. One of the same company, Inova LNG, they're going to get all of their power from renewables like wind and solar, just sort of to sweeten the deal, if you will.
Yeah.
So there were some concessions made during this process.
Something tells me that this is not the final answer, however. I can't imagine that there won't be further protests and perhaps legal challenges.
Right. No. I'm glad you brought that up. As a matter of fact, this is, now that they got their permits, this doesn't mean necessarily that they get built. You've got to let the free market decide whether or not these projects get built. You know, only one of these projects had a publicly announced, you know, contract, and the other two didn't have any offtake agreements for, you know, for customers overseas. So now that they have this permit, they've got to really step up their efforts to secure these contracts, secure the financing, and get these things built. Now, that's for the collective price tag is nearly $39 billion.
Wow.
They've got to come up with that money, and they've got to get the customer support and the bank financial support to do that. Whether or not that gets done, that remains to be seen. And then in the meantime, some of the opponents to these projects have legal status in the application process. That means they can request rehearings, and they can file lawsuits. They can do all types of things to delay these projects. They could interfere with customer contracts. You know, like one of them has a customer in Ireland, but over there in Ireland there were environmentalists and activists and protesters, you know, protesting against LNG. So there's, you know, putting pressure on both ends, if you will. It's a very sophisticated opposition that these companies face.
Something tells me Sergio Chapa is going to have his hands full covering this story as it continues to develop. He's an oil and gas reporter for the Houston Chronicle. Sergio, thanks for getting us up to speed today.
Thank you. No problem.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Texas Oncology, with a reminder that November is Lung Cancer Awareness Month. The sound approach to lung cancer prevention is to avoid smoking and tobacco products while working toward a healthy lifestyle. More at TexasOncology.com. Support for Texas Standard comes from Texas CASA, advocating for a safe and positive future for all Texas children in the child protection system. Volunteer information at BecomeACASA.org. Every child has a chance. It's you.
From the Texas Newsroom, I'm Joseph Leahy. Governor Greg Abbott says flags at the Texas Capitol are half-staff until sunset to honor two Fort Hood-based soldiers killed this week during a helicopter crash in Afghanistan. They were Chief Warrant Officers Kirk Fuchigami Jr. and David Nadel. The majority of people arrested for misdemeanors in the most populous county in Texas will now be released on a no-cash bond. A federal judge on Thursday gave final approval to a historic legal settlement overhauling Harris County's bail system. The Houston Chronicle's Gabrielle Banks has been covering the case for years. She explains Chief U.S. District Judge Lee Rosenthal deemed the county's previous bail practices unconstitutional as a two-tiered system.
People who had the money were able to pay their bond and leave the jail and resume their jobs and their livelihoods. And people who were arrested on the exact same offense with the exact same record, who didn't have the money, would go to jail, and it would pretty much change the course of their lives.
Banks says the agreement also creates several new protections for misdemeanor defendants.
And those are public defender services, court reminders for appearances, and a lot more flexibility from the judiciary, making it possible for people to show up for court.
Harris County will have a court-appointed monitor to oversee implementation of the settlement for 7 years. A surge in donations is helping the Houston Food Bank restock supplies ahead of the Thanksgiving holiday. Houston Public Media's Sasha Cordner reports the nonprofit has thrown out nearly 2 million pounds of food since last week due to a refrigerator facility malfunction.
The loss was a major blow to the Houston Food Bank and the food pantries it supplies. But the food bank's Nicole Lander says the shelves are filling up again thanks to an outpouring of corporate support.
We just had some turkeys dropped off from Butterball. We've even seen produce companies support us. Ken's Produce, I can call out. And then United Way, United Airlines.
Grocery chain HEB has also pledged to deliver truckloads of produce, meat, and other products to the food bank. Kroger donated $50,000 and perishable goods. Lander says the Houston Food Bank still needs volunteers to help replenish their cooler and to distribute meals. I'm Sasha Cordner in Houston.
Federal prosecutors say a 47-year-old man faces up to 10 years in prison for crashing through a military-based barricade on the Texas Gulf Coast with a stolen truck last month. Brian Dale Robinson is also accused of running around Naval Air Station Corpus Christi with a handgun he found in the vehicle. He pleaded guilty to charges Thursday. I'm Joseph Leahy.
Support for these Texas headlines comes from the law firm of Barron, Adler, Clough, and Odo, handling eminent domain and condemnation cases throughout Texas, protecting private property rights for over 30 years. BarronAdler.com. Support for coverage of business comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping companies protect their drivers on the road. More at WorkSafeTexas.com/onthejob.
33 minutes past the hour, Texas Standard Time. I'm David Brown. It was lauded as a way to get patients out of the middle of money squabbles between health care providers and insurers, legislation designed to do away with those surprise medical bills so many Texans have found themselves stuck with. But surprise, when the law takes effect in January, some Texans may still find themselves stuck. KUT Austin's Ashley Lopez reports.
Earlier this year, lawmakers from both parties came together to work on outlawing surprise medical bills for as many Texans as they could. Senate Bill 1264 created an arbitration process for insurers and providers to negotiate prices in situations where patients with state-regulated health plans unknowingly get out-of-network care. Stacey Pogue with the Center for Public Policy Priorities says the fact that the legislature agreed on a way to fix this is historic.
I haven't seen a bill with a scope this big, that it could be this meaningful for the finances, the financial security of a family, pass in the 12 years I've been doing this.
But that protection could soon be at risk in non-emergency situations. That's because of a provision in the bill that created a narrow exception for people who knowingly want to receive care from a doctor out of their health plan's network.
The financial struggle that legislators were trying to remove us from, they're trying to protect us from, patients might be right back in the middle of that situation.
After a law is passed, it's up to the agencies that will enforce it to write up the rules for implementation. And when the Texas Medical Board went through its rulemaking process, they proposed the rules advocates are concerned about. Stacey Pogue and others are specifically concerned about a rule that would require all out-of-network providers in non-emergency situations to give patients a form that could, in practice, waive their rights to not get a surprise bill.
Now it's a loophole. It's a loophole in the protection where legislators wanted to give patients a protection, a win-win. And now some patients are going to get a lose-lose. They're going to have a scheduled procedure and be asked to essentially choose between two terrible outcomes.
That's a choice between paying more for providers they didn't choose or canceling or delaying a needed medical procedure. The Texas Medical Board, by the way, doesn't see it this way. In a statement, a spokesperson said the proposed rules do not, quote, waive any rights a patient has under Senate Bill 1264 or any statute. The board created rules it believes, quote, provides patients with enough advance notice to make a reasoned economic decision in regards to the care they are receiving.
They're leaving a lot of questions unanswered and creating a lot of concern about how this is all going to play out.
That's Blake Hudson with the AARP of Texas. He says the good news is people in emergency situations will definitely be shielded from surprise medical bills starting January 1st. But it's not clear whether people not in emergencies will get the same amount of protection. Hudson says allowing providers and not patients to choose when to use the waiver could create widespread abuse of what was supposed to be a narrow exception.
It looks like what they're going to do is let your surgeon or whoever works at the front desk include in your packet a form that essentially waives your surprise medical bill protections for all of those out-of-network physicians.
That could be the anesthesiologist or pathologist, basically any of the different people involved in your procedure.
And that's a really big concern for consumers and definitely is not the intent of Senate Bill 1264. And everyone that was involved in the process of developing this law knows that.
In a statement, the Texas Association of Health Plans said the rule misinterprets the law's intent and actually makes surprise billing protections weaker than they were before the law was passed. State Senator Kelly Hancock, a Republican from North Richland Hills, sponsored SB 1264. He says the intent of the legislation was to protect every Texan with a state-regulated health insurance plan from getting a surprise bill. Period. And he says he will not accept an outcome in the rulemaking process that doesn't reflect that.
And so we have no intentions of seeing the efforts and the intentions of legislators being ignored just because associations want to get things their way.
But State Representative Tom Oliverson, a Republican from Cyprus who co-sponsored the bill, says he's not as concerned with the proposed rules. He said the waiver process included in the bill was supposed to be something that was rarely used. And Oliverson, who is an anesthesiologist in Texas, thinks providers won't abuse that. And if they do, he said, lawmakers will get rid of that exception in 2021. But that's what some healthcare advocates say they don't want. They say they don't want to go through this again. Blake Hudson says SB 1264 was painfully created, and lawmakers took the time to find a compromise with both insurers and providers, which was no easy task.
You know, there's a lot of money in healthcare, and so the different interests are going to use whatever they can to keep collecting money on the backs of consumers wherever they can, unfortunately. It's frustrating.
The proposed rules are expected to be discussed during the board's upcoming meeting in early December and could possibly be adopted as early as then. Either way, the new law is set to be in effect January 1st. I'm Ashley Lopez for the Texas Standard.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Texas CASA, advocating for a safe and positive future for all Texas children in the child protection system. Volunteer information at becomeacasa.org. Every child has a chance. It's you.
Love is patient. Love is kind.
This is the Texas Standard. My name is Trey A. Schultz. I grew up in Spring, Texas, on the outskirts of Houston, and a bit going back and forth between Spring and Austin. I'm the writer and director of Waves.
It's been hard, hasn't it?
Let go of a prayer for you.
How you doing with everything?
I'm good.
Just a sweet word.
You know it's okay if you're not.
It's a kind of an epic family drama about the highs and lows of life and love and everything in between.
Everything I do is for you. Everything.
I know you're under a lot of pressure right now, but I'm just getting really scared.
It's very personal. Been brewing for a very long time. You know, you could say there's a lot of autobiography in it, combined with fictional narrative, and they're all looped together throughout the whole thing. And then I think another big part of it was meeting Kelvin Harrison Jr., the actor of my last film, and collaborating on this one together and pushing that.
We are not afforded the luxury of being average.
You know, the movie does go to some dark places, but it's about understanding how you get to those dark places and hopefully, though, pushing on the other side of it and trying to heal again and find some love and hope and all that beautiful stuff.
This family together.
You pushed him.
I think in exploring the dark side of stuff, you can learn and grow from it. So even if it's, you know, there's hard things to get, that's life, right? There's hard things you got to go through, and you got to look at yourself to grow.
All we have is now. All we have is now.
But that's sort of the spirit of the movie too. Like, how, can we understand it enough and keep it human and empathetic, and you know, even if we lead to tragedy and this terrible thing, are we stuck there? Can we push past it? Can we try to grow from it?
What a difference a day made. 24 little hours.
Please see it. You know, it's a heavy movie, but it's also at times light and beautiful, and it's like the range of emotions, and it's a very human film. And movies like this we need to be seeing movies like this in theaters. It's not all just superhero movies. So please get out and support it. You're going to feel things, you know, hopefully feel a lot of ranging things. And I love the idea of like it, bringing out some communication with your loved ones, either that's your lover or your parent or your child or whatever.
Lord, what a difference a day makes. There's a rainbow before me.
Hi, I'm Trey Edward Schultz. I'm the writer and director of Waves, and you're listening to the Texas Standard.
What a difference a day made, and the difference is you.
Support for Texas Standard comes from TCU, where horned frogs strive to be a force for the greater good. Stories of TCU faculty, student, and alumni changemakers can be explored online at leadon.tcu.edu.
44 minutes past the hour, Texas Standard Time. I'm David Brown. Lately, large searchlights have been lighting up the sky along the U.S.-Mexico border between El Paso and Ciudad Juarez. And no, they have nothing to do with border enforcement, but instead an attempt to bring people together through art. KERA's Mallory Falk takes us inside.
Hola, Mexico.
Hola, El Paso.
It's called Border Tuner, as in the dial you use to tune into a radio station. Here's how it works. You step up to a microphone and turn a small wheel that controls a set of searchlights. Someone at another station just across the border does the same. When your lights intersect in the sky, you can start a conversation.
¿Cómo estás?
Bien, ¿y tú?
Bien.
That's a woman in Juarez speaking to a young boy in El Paso. They can't see each other's faces, but they can hear each other's voices, booming from loudspeakers.
¿Cuántos años tienes?
Seis.
This project was 2 years in the making. The brainchild of artist Rafael Lozano Hemmer. He's originally from Mexico City and based in Montreal now. Lozano Hemmer's created interactive sound and light installations all over the world, and he's been drawn to the U.S.-Mexico border, especially since President Trump's election. He says artists here are tired of the same narratives surrounding this place, about divisiveness and racism and militarizing the border.
While all of this is true, there's so many other narratives that are being missed, you know, about interdependence and coexistence, and about the fact that connections between at least El Paso and Ciudad Juarez go deep.
So he designed a project to highlight those narratives. The installation runs through Sunday. Each night starts with a half-hour performance by local musicians, activists, historians. But the most intimate moments come when two strangers connect.
I help people seeking asylum.
Erica Rosales Negaglioni, an attorney who often works with asylum seekers, is talking with a middle school art teacher in Juarez. They thank each other for doing such important work.
Yeah, you should be very proud.
You should too. Erica says she was overcome by the experience.
Seeing the lights and seeing how they flicker with the voices was just very emotional. And just to think about, we're not separated by much.
For Tracy Harris, who brought her two young children to Porter Tuner, the installation is an opportunity to drive that message home. She says her kids have asked lots of questions.
About who's over there, and I'm telling them it's like here. You know, they're walking up to talk to, and then it just kind of hits them like, hey, there's other kids and, you know, there's other people over there, and they're like us.
It's an especially magical night for Harris's daughter, Annabella, who's celebrating her 8th birthday. People on both sides of the border serenade her in English and Spanish. This section of the El Paso Juarez border is divided by a wall, but artist Rafael Lozano Hemmer sees the searchlights forming a sort of bridge above that barrier.
The idea that the artwork takes place above that wall, to me, is symbolically important because it's almost like you're trying to ignore it. You know, you're trying to say we still share the atmosphere.
At the microphones, two women are also sharing their love of music. I'm Mallory Falk in El Paso.
Support for Texas Standard comes from the Texas Association of Community Colleges, providing pathways for Texans to advance the individual aspirations of students while focusing on accessibility, affordability, and relevance. More at tacc.org. Support for Texas Standard comes from Texas Oncology, with a reminder that November is Lung Cancer Awareness Month. The sound approach to lung cancer prevention is to avoid smoking and tobacco products while working toward a healthy lifestyle. More at TexasOncology.com.
My name is David Fruchter, and I am with the Typewriter Rodeo. Group of friends, writers, who take our vintage manual typewriters and we type poems on request for anyone who comes up and asks us for a poem. Autumnal Elegy. Finally, the air is cool. It felt like the heat took forever to dissipate, the summer so late to depart that we thought it would never. But now there's a snap to the air that refreshes, and even a sprinkle of damp, making me want to dig up my boots and my jacket and go for a tramp through woods where leaves fallen obscure the path and the bird calls all echo across some creek bed valley. If you stay indoors this time of year, it's your loss. Get yourself moving. Take in the scent of the world as it starts winding down. With clear eyes and clear air, let it come in to your being and you will have found, for a moment, peace. My name is David Fruchter, and I am with the Typewriter Rodeo. You're listening to the Texas Standard.
Support for the Typewriter Rodeo comes from Texas Children's Hospital, focused on outcomes and care, and providing treatment to kids in the Lone Star State and beyond for more than 60 years. Texas Children's Hospital, personalized care for every child. More at texaschildrens.org.
Where did that poem come from? It comes from our friends at Typewriter Rodeo. That's where. If you've got an idea for a topic, let us know. Send us your requests on social media or just shoot us an email, texasstandard@kut.org. Time to turn to politics on this Friday. Here to talk about the week that was is Cassandra Pollack. She is the Texas Tribune state politics reporter. Cassie, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
In presidential politics this week, we had that debate in Atlanta, but we also had someone not on that debate stage filing to be on the primary ballot in Texas. Who and what's up?
We sure did. Michael Bloomberg, billionaire and former New York City mayor, filed this week for the Democratic presidential primary in Texas. You know, somewhat surprising just because there hasn't been a formal announcement of a candidacy, although he is all but certain at this point going to enter the field to run for president. He is the fourth person to file for the primary in Texas, and he's joining Pete Buttigieg, Kamala Harris, Amy Klobuchar, the sole Texan in the race, as you know. Julian Castro has yet to file to put his name on the ballot.
Very interesting. I guess Bloomberg has the money for it, though. I think it's $2,500, if I'm not mistaken, to put your name in there on the ballot.
Yep, it is. Deadline is December 9th.
Well, there we go. Yeah, keep your eyes on that number. Former Speaker of the Texas House, Joe Strauss, that's a name that is familiar to a lot of Texans. He was weighing in on a Supreme Court case this week. What's the backstory there?
You're totally right there. I mean, on Tuesday, former Texas House Speaker Joe Strauss writes an op-ed for a news outlet essentially calling on the U.S. Supreme Court to protect LGBTQ people against workplace discrimination. It's kind of coming against the backdrop of SCOTUS hearing oral arguments for three cases related to that. You know, there aren't really any federal laws right now in place protecting LGBTQ people from workplace discrimination. And more than half of the states in the country, including Texas, have no state laws explicitly in place protecting people from such a thing. So, you know, I'm chalking this up to Strauss staying in the conversation, wanting to remain a figure on the political landscape just ahead of course, the election cycle.
And Joe Strauss is a Republican, of course, and one of those big tent Republicans, I suppose, some people might describe him as. Some drama in the Texas Democratic Party. Representative Henry Cuellar, a moderate from Laredo, getting quite a challenge from a candidate who used to be his intern running to his left. Tell us a little bit about Jessica Cisneros and why she's getting so much attention.
Yeah, I mean, you said it perfectly right there. Jessica Cisneros, 26-year-old immigration attorney, former intern for Cuellar. She's challenging Cuellar, and she's kind of building herself as the more progressive candidate in the race. As you know, Cuellar is one of the most conservative Democrats on the Hill. And, you know, the interesting thing here is kind of the congressional district that this is playing out in. You know, it spans from western Hidalgo County, right outside McAllen city limits, up north to Laredo. It's a huge district. In 2016, it went to Hillary Clinton by 20 percentage points. Beto O'Rourke in 2018 won by similar margins for the U.S. Senate race. And, you know, it's kind of a district where the person who ends up winning is usually decided in a primary challenge. And this is, you know, Cuellar, he's consistently won elections by healthy margins, though he's never had a primary challenger, of course, in a district where such a race is going to decide who more than likely represents it.
He's won an endorsement from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the Queens representative, who's upset, sort of rocked the political world. And some people, of course, saying that could happen here in Texas as well. We're out of time. Cassie Pollock is state politics reporter for the Texas Tribune, and you can keep up with everything Texas politics over at texastribune.org. Cassie, great to talk with you. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You as well.
And you are listening to the Texas Standard. So what are Texans talking about on social media? You know who's got the answers to that. It's our friend Wells Dunbar here. Wells, what are you seeing?
Hi, David. Here's a fun story for heading into the weekend. You know, no one would ever accuse Houston, Texas of modesty, but the fine dining scene there has an ostentatious new entrant even by H-Town standards.
You didn't say ostentatious, did you?
Well, it's ostentatious. Okay. This new steakhouse, Guard and Grace, it has all the market price cuts of beef you would imagine, plus an exorbitant signature dish. Get ready. A $400 order of fajitas.
A $400 order of fajitas. Those got to be some mighty fine fajitas.
I would imagine so. The Houston Chronicle, they shared this news in their review of the restaurant. Guard and Grace's millionaire fajitas comprise, quote, a theatrical presentation of charred rib cap wagyu presented with wheat locoche and gold, yes, gold leaf tortillas, charred peppers and onions, and a side of green chili enchiladas, close quote. Yes. Word of the $400 fajitas blew up my Twitter feed, and it looks like our friends and listeners have something to say about them, too. On our Facebook page, Josh Fredman says, putting gold leaf on food is so wasteful, it doesn't interact with the body, and it goes straight out the other end. And in the end, it's not even about having a good meal, Josh says. It's about prestige, It's about saying I spent $400 to eat gold and mold and Wagyu beef. Huitlacoche being the corn mold there.
Yeah.
John Davis says, my mom makes $400 fajitas, but charges only a hug and a thank you.
Aww.
Isn't that sweet? And Brent Crockett says, it's fall. Anyone can forage for gold leaves on the ground for free.
Oh, no.
But I'm bumped. But, yeah, and you know, I would eat the $400 fajitas. I don't know if I'd pay for them myself. You know, maybe that's a sort of expense account. Maybe we can take a road trip to Houston.
I'm not sure that they allow that expense here, but you know, have to
check
the rules.
It's a little steep, very much so.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about this earlier. The numerous Texans among the Grammy nominations, Houston-rooted Lizzo, Austin native Gary Clark Jr. picking up several nominations. Mm-hmm. Lots of folks chiming in on that one. On our Facebook page, Jennifer Ramos calls both of those nominations well-deserved. Lots of other folks chiming in as well.
Hey, listen, we're out of time for the big broadcast, and our weekend is about to get underway. But you can keep up with all the news at texasstandard.org. Laura Rice is going to be in this seat coming in on Monday, I believe it is, and we hope you will join her. Till then, I'm David Brown wishing you a wonderful weekend.
Support for Texas Standard comes from the Texas Medical Center's Dr. Tim Garson and Ryan Holywell, authors of Exposing the 20 Medical Myths, Why Everything You Know About Healthcare Is Wrong and How to Make It Right, available on Amazon. Support for Texas Standard comes from Abilene Christian University, focusing on student success within key areas like service learning, first-year experiences, and learning communities. More at acu.edu. Philanthropic support for Texas Standard comes from Casey and Scott O'Hare, the Winkler Family Foundation, Lynn Dobson and Greg Waldridge, Adrian Killam, and the George Huntington family. Would your company or organization like to be a sponsor as well? Contact your local station for opportunities within your community. For statewide sponsorships, visit texaspublicmedianetwork.com.